today. It's great to see such a good turnout. Without further ado, I'm going to introduce people as we go along. We've only got now 40 minutes, and I know people are waiting to hear our colleagues from Bosnia. But first of all, I'm going to ask Professor Fred Halliday from the London School of Economics, International Relations Department, well known and loved, I'm sure, to you all here, to introduce the meeting. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I begin on behalf of all of us in the community of the London School of Economics in bidding welcome to our colleagues from Bosnia. Welcome to them in the name of the academic values for which we stand, but also welcome to them, I think, in the name of the broader human values that underlie the academic enterprise and the commitment to democracy and peace, which we all share. And particularly to welcome them at a time where, with all the misgivings that even those of us who know very little about former Yugoslavia can muster, and with all the misgivings which come from different quarters, and of course the misgivings take many different forms, there is nevertheless a glimmer of hope, a glimmer that some line can be drawn under this chapter of the nightmare, and that the difficult task of reconstruction can begin. We greet them as academic colleagues, not to deny the other things we share with them, not to deny the horror which all of us have felt for the last 4 years, but because there is something that we can do as academics, as students, as staff, as researchers, to join with the colleagues in Bosnia to continue, and let us not forget they have continued throughout this war, life in two of the four university campuses in Bosnia, but also to develop and rebuild, whether it's through the provision of books or the provision of programs or the provision of colleagues who may want to go there or be able to go there. This is a commitment which I think we all share. I myself am not an expert on this region. I knew former Yugoslavia as a tourist. I think in common with all of us who visited Yugoslavia in that time, one could not have imagined that the things which have happened would happen. But last July I was invited, on the basis of my ignorance, to attend a meeting in Vienna organized by the United Nations of 50 people who are from all the different parties and factions in former Yugoslavia, ranging from representatives of the ruling parties to their opponents and minorities. And it was a fascinating few days. I don't think any of us who attended that meeting believed then that peace was at hand, and in that sense I think that the conference ended in a note of depression. I listened to all the participants, including those who waxed eloquent in attacking the multicultural character of Sarajevo, from the Olympics to I don't know what. But I remember above all the words of a psychiatrist who worked with children from all the communities who have been affected by this war, and who expressed deep exasperation and anger at what this war had done and the continuation of this war to the children and of all the different groups in Yugoslavia, and of what it would mean for many years and possibly generations to come. And I must say, the historians and the participants may prove us wrong on this, but I think it's very, very hard, looking at this war from the outside and reading or listening to it to the extent to which one does, to accept that this war was necessary or that these wars were inevitable. I think one of the strong traditions in the LSE, particularly when nationalism is concerned, is to question that things have always been as they are. They very often have not been as they are. These things had to be created, these things had to be made to happen, and they were made to happen by political leaders who are still there. And I think that adds to the horror and adds to the tragedy of what has happened. We now face a situation in which there is a possibility of peace. One doesn't have to open any newspaper to see the reservations, the qualifications, the oppositions, and the longer term, I mean after 1 year, anxieties which this peace arouses. But I would only say that in other contexts where such peace is very precarious peace agreements have also unexpectedly come in recent years. I think of Ireland, I think of the Arab-Israeli context, both of which I know much better. I think it ill behoves those of us who are outside those contexts and who have not suffered as people have suffered in them to jump up and say, this is a lousy peace, don't accept it, and the rest of it. If those who have participated and suffered have tried to make a peace, that those voices should above all be respected, and it's in that spirit, I hope, that we are here today. So it gives me, with a great sense of humility, given the experience which our guests have been through and the commitment they have given to maintaining university life, in which the number of students has been cut, in which many of the staff have been driven out, in which nearly all the books have been destroyed, and that's just for openers. It gives me a great sense of humility, but also pleasure to welcome them here today on behalf of the London School of Economics. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred. Before we go on to our speakers from Bosnia, can I just introduce, first of all, to speak for a few minutes on the Academic Lifeline for Bosnia, someone who's been involved in that organisation for several years now, and she will tell you a little bit about it. Celia Hawksworth from the School of Slavonic Studies in the University of London.
Right, and I know you're here to hear our colleagues from Bosnia, but just very quickly, while they're talking, if you want to think of things that you can do as you wish to respond to what they have to say when they describe the situation, what it's been like trying to keep university life going in these absolutely unimaginable conditions. So my task is simply to tell you a little bit about the framework that exists for support, which is now beginning to gather some momentum in this country. I should say that when I first got involved with the academic situation in Bosnia quite early on in the war, the situation seemed desperate. And I came into contact, first of all, with students who were here all over the world as refugees. That was my first contact because they were sort of immediately present. And in that process, I became aware of a large number of student groups, particularly all over Europe, very effective student groups, particularly in France and Germany and Holland, who were doing a great many practical things. And in fact, one group, the Étudiants pour Sarajevo, very soon set up an office in Sarajevo itself. And I was increasingly anxious and ashamed that there didn't seem to be very much going on in this country. Now, it turns out that there are a few student groups. There is an organization, Student Aid for Bosnia, which has been taking convoys to Tuzla and will continue doing. And we hope that now, when the communications get easier with Sarajevo, very soon we hope to be able to organize a convoy to Sarajevo. But I think the initial context in which I've been taking any action at all is one of a slight sense of embarrassment and shame that we haven't been more obviously active in this country. So now is your moment. I hope that there are leaflets describing the work of the Academic Lifeline roundabout. I see various people have them. So the Academic Lifeline was set up along the same lines as an organization in Graz in Austria. Now, because Graz is very much closer to Bosnia, it's obviously been that much easier to make the whole thing seem possible, to make it seem possible for people to respond. So we've, in a way, tagged along behind the organization in Graz in setting up the Academic Lifeline in this country. And this visit, which we've organized, we hope is going to be the first step in promoting the work of the Academic Lifeline and really getting things moving in this country. And I'd just like to say that we have had support from the Foreign Office, for which we're very grateful in setting up this visit. And also we've had absolutely invaluable assistance from the AUT, as one of the members of the Academic Lifeline Committee is a very active member of the AUT. So the point of the visit is to try and stimulate offers from various universities around the UK. Our poor visitors have been sent far and wide around the country. They've been to Oxford, Cambridge, Kent, Edinburgh, Birmingham, Kiel, Derby, Nottingham, Leicester, Southampton, Sussex, various London colleges, Y College and Imperial, and all the major London music schools, as Professor Sieric is Dean of the Music Faculty in Sarajevo. There are lots and lots more universities that they haven't been to, and plenty more that we need to make contact with. And I would like to urge anybody who has any contacts with any other universities we haven't yet managed to reach, please to start the ball rolling. And if you manage to find individuals who are likely to respond, please let us know through the Lifeline address so that we can work on new contacts as well. Especially in London, because London is a really daunting prospect, and on the one hand. And on the other hand, there are so many opportunities in London. So please, if there are students here who have contacts in other parts of London University or the new universities in London, please work on them and then let us know. So Professor Halliday mentioned the kinds of things that we are specifically talking about. These are to start with money, and there's going to be a bit more about money at the end, because that is the essential commodity for people to survive in the immediate short term. And Hazel Smith has a project, the Stop the Brain Drain is the slogan, to encourage academic colleagues to part with a certain sum of money. And I would like to encourage also students to do the same. And if students think in terms of, say, 50 pence a month, that's roughly £4 or £5 a year, should be manageable. If we can get a commitment from a large number of students, that really would be helpful. If you can imagine what it's like, I know that students have a hard time living on their pathetic grants or loans in this country in any case, but if you can imagine what it's like having absolutely nothing, then a packet of cigarettes or a beer once a month is a manageable prospect. So we'll try and set that up through the NUS as a established scheme. So there's money, and another thing that everyone can do is, and very easily, is set up some sort of fundraising event, very easily, and it's, you know, it's relatively painless to raise a few hundred pounds of an evening. Incidentally, if anyone is interested in taking that further and setting up a fundraising evening, we have a film of university life in Sarajevo in the winter, which is extremely vivid, and it's very hard not to respond to. So if anyone is ready to try and arrange an evening, please, again, through Hazel Smith or through me at the School of Slavonic Studies, we can arrange to let you have a copy of the film. Each of us can do something. Money's the obvious thing. Next thing is textbooks, of course. Up-to-date textbooks, not 10 years ago, textbooks lying gathering dust on the shelves, but contemporary textbooks, particularly in the last 4 years, where they simply haven't got into Bosnia. Subscriptions to journals. English language teaching materials, these are essential, because in order to be able to take advantage of any other possible links, then the English language is essential. Computer materials. Then apart from that kind of object, we need offers of people to go and teach short courses. It can be really very short, a week, 2 weeks, a month, nothing too daunting, or longer, of course. And then we want to persuade universities also to set up scholar fellowships to allow young colleagues to come over for, again, three months, say, a short period, just to refresh their knowledge of their field because they've been completely out of touch for so long. So those are the sort of things that I would like everyone here, if possible, to go away with one idea of something they would pursue to try and make this academic lifeline really come to life and do what we can to support our colleagues who've been surviving and maintaining academic standards through the most unbelievable conditions, which they will now try and describe to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Celia. Fred will be coming back for a few minutes at the end to reiterate some of those things. And I now want to go on to introduce our colleagues from Bosnia. I really mean it when I say it's a privilege to be chairing this meeting jointly with Fred, University of Kent, London School of Economics. We have a very, very, very distinguished panel here from Bosnia of speakers. I think the great pity is that it took the war for us to get together in this way. Our first speaker is the rector of the University of Sarajevo, which is, you all know, is a very old and distinguished university, and Professor Mulabegovic, the rector of the University of Sarajevo, is going to talk to you about Bosnia, about the academic community. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues and friends, I'd like to introduce you to the University of the Sarajevo. The university is founded 46 years ago, and the first faculty in the Sarajevo was the medical faculty, founded in the 1943. Before the war and aggression of the Bosnia and Herzegovina, our university had of between 22 and 24,000 students, and 1,400 staff of the university. Today, in this academic year, we have 8,000 students, and 900 staff of the university. The University of the Sarajevo have 25 faculties and 4 academies. Better it was so before the war. In the 3.5 years ago, 5 about our faculties are completely destroyed. 60% of the buildings of the university were destroyed in the war period. 70% of the equipments of the laboratories of the university were also destroyed. The university library was completely destroyed in the first year of the war. And as you know, our university, our colleagues, students and professors also, are now in very difficult situation. But in this war period, the university was in the function all the time. For our students, for us also, were very difficult. And I like not to speak to you about the different problems than we had in the war period. I like to speak to you about what we need in this moment and what we need in our future. This visit of the universities of England is my first official visit. We like to have the links between our university and the England's university, directly the links between the faculties. We need in this moment the visiting professors after 4 years of the blockade completely blockade in then is Sarajevo city and the University of the Sarajevo also. We like to have the new information. What were in the science, in the research, in the all relevant for the work and function of the university. In this moment, we like to have the science magazines, to have the new books. We like to have the equipments, chemicals, laboratories for our students. The quality of the education, the quality of the research on the University of the Sarajevo before the war were as in the more of other European countries or universities. We had the links, we had the results, and we like that soon in the future our university will be in the family of the European universities. Thank you.
Because I'm professor, it is not necessary to be in front of. I can stand here. I want to apologize for my English. Maybe it is not so good. I am self-taught person, and I do hope you will understand me. First of all, I want to say that I'm very glad that I'm here, and that I have opportunity to say something about the University of Tuzla. University of Tuzla is young university, 20 years old, with 9 faculties, starting from medicine to mining. It means that we have on one side medicine and philosophy and faculty for teachers for handicapped people and economy, and on the other side, faculty of engineering, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, mining, geology, and that will be all what we have now on our university. We have 7,000 students, half of them are soldiers in the army. Same time. It means that they are students and soldiers at the same time. And two curious things I want to emphasize now to you. First of all, for us professors, that we are working for almost 4 years without salary. That will be good for you to come and maybe to learn how to work without salary for your future here in this country. And second is that how it is possible to be a student and at the same time be a soldier in the army. For the 4 academic years, very specific system was organized. It means that the people who are serving in the army and who are on the 1st, 4th, and 5th year of their study, they can come for 4 weeks to study on the university, and then they can go back on the front line. Mostly sitting in trenches and learning. And that is the second what I want to tell to the young people. The best students on our university are soldiers who are serving in the army. It means that they have enough time sitting in the trenches. The best way to be a good student here is to dig somewhere some trenches and sit there and learn. Because if you are comfortable right here, it is very difficult to learn. And that is something what is very specific for the University of Tuzla. For professors working in very enthusiastic, I don't know how to call that, but that is something what I want to emphasize now. For us, knowledge is the most important. What I can give to my students is the knowledge, and I believe in education. I believe in the future, and that is the reason why I work so hard, maybe much harder than before the war, because I want to give all what I know to my students. The reason is that you never know when you start to walk from your home to the university building. It is always a possibility to be killed by shell. It is not possible in Tuzla to be killed by sniper. But you must know that each professor in Sarajevo University has the chance to be killed by shell or by sniper. That is the reason why we work very hard, trying to do our best to give the people that kind of knowledge which we have. And that is the reason why we want to ask you to provide us with the books you need not. Not books, let's say, like I find in one box, Geology of Vietnam from 1954. Maybe it is a good message, because you can start to learn geology, let's say, from 54, and you know how it was in Vietnam. The war stopped maybe 20 years after 54. That is maybe some kind of message to our, that was some kind of message to our people, that we must try to do for our country, to do the best, because you never know when the war will stop. We have some kind of peace agreement, but I personally do not believe that the peace agreement is the last peace agreement, because each peace agreement has, let's say, 5 or 10 pages. This peace agreement is so big, and you can find a lot of paper on both sides of the paper, because maybe in UN they are very lucky, and maybe in United States they are very lucky with the paper, if I may say so. That is what I want to say. I am open to all kind of questions. Please do not hesitate to put the question, and maybe if I know, I can give you the answer like it was in my speech, very open. And thank you very much.
I hope that we are going to have time, and it looks like we are going to, because our speakers have been relatively relatively brief. Hope we are going to have time for some questions, but before we go into questions, I'd like to introduce the last of our distinguished panel, and it's Professor Sierich, who is the Vice-Rector of the University of Sarajevo and also the Director of the Music School at the University of Sarajevo.
Distinguished colleagues, dear students, as you know very good, Bosnia is a very central European country. In reality, that's a junction of East and West, North and South, junction of West European, Eastern European, Oriental, even a little bit African cultures. Because of that, we have there so many religions, and only Jerusalem could be compared with Sarajevo. Only within 100 meters, we have mosques, cathedrals, Orthodox Church, and even two synagogues. And all that was in function. We had really 100 years good coming life. And I would like to tell you, and you must know, that even in this war, this coming life, this multicultural, multinational, national life in Sarajevo, as some other bigger cities, is preserved, is saved. On our university, we have students from all nations, Jews, Serbs, Croats, Bosnians, even from the other nations which used to live in Bosnia. The same things is among our teachers. Why I'm telling that? Because I have one impression that you are not quite well informed what kind of war is that. Is it religion against religion, nation against nation, some kind of citizen war, something like that? No, nothing of that. That's classical, just national fascistic aggression. Nothing special, nothing too complicated. And what this aggression, what kind of hell brought to Sarajevo? On the lessons of history you pass through, of course, and when you have learned about Second World War, you are informed that Leningrad was under the siege 700 days. Sarajevo is under the siege more than 1,200 days, almost twice as Leningrad. What does it mean to be and to live under the siege? You saw that on TV, on maybe some science fiction movies, or some historical, something like that. But in reality, I don't wish you, anybody of you, to have such experience. Sarajevo is not so big a city. Before the war, we had about 500,000, 550,000 inhabitants. Now we have about 350,000 inhabitants there. Sarajevo is surrounded by the mountains. That's level below the sea, over the sea, how you call it in English, I don't know.
Above sea,
yeah, that's it. It's pretty high. Sarajevo is on 560 meters, and the mountains surrounding are 1,600, 2,000, so that's something like in Switzerland, some. Very cold place, much colder than here in London. I was surprised that you have so good weather here. So in these circumstances, to be under the siege, that means to be without any energy, without water, without electricity, without food, and in the same time, all the time, under heavy bombarding, snipering, shooting, and so on. When I mention bombarding, in the Second World War, some of cities, even here, London was bombarded. I don't know how many days, but for sure, not 3 years every day. Sarajevo was bombarded more than 3 years every day. Not every second day or only by holiday. No, no. Every day. That was really a very bad and terrible time. Somebody counted that over than 3 million of grenades dropped on Sarajevo. In Sarajevo, there is no one, exactly no one house which wasn't hit by grenades. Some of them little, some of them bigger, but not one house. In Sarajevo, after all this bombardment, no one window had a glass on it. People put some nylon, some paper, something like that. No food came in Sarajevo during 2 years. Hunger was so big that I will describe you like that, that you could have some impression what is reality hunger. When dog eat dog, this is hunger. Not when you have hungry before dinner or something like that. When dog eat dogs, that's hunger. What is to have cold winter? That is when in your kitchen water transformed to the ice and stay like that for days, days and days in your kitchen. That means to have cold apartment without any heating. Could you imagine in these circumstances how one university could work? But anyhow, all our faculties of university worked. Some of them, whose buildings are totally demolished, destroyed, worked in other rooms without any heating, without electricity, in the dark. You know, in winter the day is very short. With students, hungry students, with hungry teachers, without equipment, all that what we could need. But anyway, it was in function. It was in function. We hope, we do hope, that all that terrible time is going to the end. You never know, of course. Why you never know? Because during all the war, Europe really didn't want to understand this situation. It didn't want to stop this aggression when it was much easier than today. We are very, very disappointed by behavior of some European governments, countries. We think that this behavior was so uncivilized, so against European, how shall I say, highest ideas, that really we were very, very disappointed and very, very not satisfied. Okay. But anyway, we hope that everything is going to its end. What we need in reality, we don't want to beg anything, and we didn't come here to beg anything. Please, you should understand that. But we hope that on the level of universities, there are enough people ready to understand to understand and to feel one collegial, can I say, collegial need to help one university which is now in the war. I don't think, and I don't wish, that we are going to be never in the position to help you by the same reason. We will one day help you, but not because you are going to have a war that we wish and we hope very much. Thank you.
We're going to be very, very tight for time, I'm afraid. I really don't think that there is going to be enough time to take questions, because as I understand it, the LSE organises itself so they can come in from 5 to 2 almost. Is that right? Okay, so maybe time for 2 or 3 questions. I'll take 2 or 3, and then I'll ask our panel if they would like to respond. So the lady at the back, and then Gauta.
Professor Cherich said that multicultural life saved in the university. Can you give us a little measure of this by saying what nationality, what students came, the mix of student and staff groups before the war and now?
You know, my lady, we didn't count before the war how many, what kind of, what percentage of Serbs, Bosnians. Now we also don't count that. It's not important to be counted. But we know, I know in my music academy, my colleagues who are Serbs, who are Croats, who are Jews, who are Bosnians. I know them. I see them every day. The same is on every of our faculties. When we start to count,
still puzzles me, and we have been active in working for the Bosnians in the last 4 years, is why did the British and the French betray the Bosnians so completely after the US intervention was last? And the other thing is something which is Gregor said in that documentary by Brian Lappy, which until the last part is outstanding, is that why he said we were expecting war after what Milosevic did in Slovenia. Why did they seek to decimate the Bosnian people? Why did they embark on physical annihilation systematically? Because even now, human terms is very difficult to grasp. I've seen.
Can I ask you why they left Milosevic to sign a peace agreement?
He will get a Nobel Prize, I think.
Probably.
I don't know if our panel wants to directly respond. Anybody, do you want to?
I just asked my colleagues, I didn't understand quite well the question. Because of that, I can't, but my colleague explained this very long question, complicated question. But shortly, I could say, why British and French governments betrayed Bosnia and Herzegovina? That you should ask them, not us. Why all that is not stopped all the time? You should ask them. Why Bosnia was under armed embargo? Unique country, which is attacked, bombarded every day. under armed embargo. And those countries attacking and making aggression without armed embargo, that's something very interesting. It could be for some research, very interesting thing for political research. Why it is like that? Why can't you really give response to the other people? Well, that's much better than how it was.
Before I take the next question, could I ask one of the people with the buckets to go upstairs? Just one. Somebody else? Anybody else? This lady here with the...
Could I just ask Professor
Yes, I have the information. The information come to me today from the World University Service, from Professor Wolfgang Benedek. Does the project will be finished for the 1 month? And it will be the first time after 4 years, thus we have the link with the information system, and this is very important for us. It will be our first chance. Yes?
Can I just ask as well how you see that as being used to the university? What the culture should have?
I think the answer to your question really is going to be useful. It might be broader, but it's going to be useful. And that I'm sorry to come in, but there are one or two others, and we haven't got much time left. There's a lady here.
I'd like to ask a question about the impression in Rosemary, you forming the Australian territories, about the inaction of the European government. So I do agree with you, and I do sympathise with your disappointment. And I think that you got exactly the point. I think that the European government didn't understand what they had to do. And I would like to ask, what do you actually expect from European governments? What do you think they should have done? And not only European government individually, but the European Union as a whole could have done. But you know that unfortunately, we're still under, we are still shaping European Union, military, and foreign policy, so we don't have a lot of instruments. According to what is the situation of these countries, what do you think we could have done in order to prevent this war or to help you?
We don't expect that European countries send the army into Bosnia. Not at all. We don't expect that European countries are But we expect that European countries behave like they proclamate all the time. Proclaim all the time. For instance, human rights. What is that? Can anybody here explain to me what is human rights? What is that? In every paper of European important, I don't know what, you will find this sentence, human rights. Does it really exist, and where exists, and on what, how European civilization preserves human rights? 2 months ago, in Srebrenica, maybe you are informed about it, about 7,000 people were killed just like that, like in Auschwitz. You know what? And nobody from European countries, from so-called high civilized and so on and so on, didn't do like that with a finger. Is that Europe? Do we really want such Europe? Is that future of Europe? I'm not telling now only about Bosnia. about Europe, of future Europe, spirit of Europe. Tomorrow, something like Bosnia could be not so far in Ireland, or in Basque, or in Sud Tirol. We have many fragile places in Europe. Everywhere could be something. Will Europe always behave like that? If it is like that, I am very sorry that Europe at all.
I think that was a very pertinent discussion and reminder on which we're going to have to end because of time. But before you leave, I want to ask Fred, I want to say thank you to our panel, Professor Molobegovic, Professor Sirić, Professor Manzic, on behalf of the University of Kent for coming in. I know I'm at the Academic Lifeline, and I know Professor Halliday wants to say a couple of words before you all go.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this has been a very moving and unique occasion. The question was asked, why not only did the war happen, but why did it take this form? The historians will have to address that in the future, but one very obvious reason is the denial of the humanity, the denial of the rights of the enemy, and in particular the denial of the rights of the people of Bosnia, because part of the propaganda was they're not even a nation, they don't deserve to have their own state, they don't deserve to be treated like other people. That language of denial is found in other atrocities, in other situations, and I think it underlines for us the fact that if there is a lasting peace, which I hope there will be, then it must rest on respect of all the peoples of the former Yugoslavia, on the humanity of all of them, and also on the respect for the universal values which underlie university life. We talk of the tragedy of this happening in Europe, but I think it must remind us that the worst crimes of the 20th century have happened in Europe. The worst crimes of the 20th century have been committed by Europeans. And Yugoslavia, or former Yugoslavia, is part of Europe, but the reasons why we are outraged by what has happened, the reasons why we condemn what has happened, the reasons why I think we all hope that at least some of the criminals don't get away, is because of universal values, not just of particularly European ones. And it's those universal values which appropriately and etymologically underlie the values of the university itself. So I hope we will all give generously, not just today. And let us hope that all the Yugoslavias, that all the universities of former Yugoslavia, those which have been bombarded and those which are just subjected to political tyranny without bombardment, return to the values that we all hold dear. Thank you very much.
Everybody for coming today. Some of the gentleman here wants to make another announcement about a related meeting. And the buckets are there. I don't have to repeat why they're there. So,
hi, I'm from Student Aid for Bosnia, which was mentioned earlier. And I just want to say we're having a meeting tomorrow between 6 and 7.30 in the St. Clement's building, which is at the end of the road, in the basement, room S08. Dr. Noel Malcolm will be speaking on the peace deal. He's an author of Bosnia short history and expert in that field. As far as what we're doing, we're going on a Christmas convoy, leaving on Christmas Eve, going to Tuzla University. We are taking personal packages for students there, food, clothes, also personal items such as music tapes, magazines, even things you wouldn't think of as luxuries like chewing gum, which is, you know, makes people feel like they're normal again. I've put an appeal to any students here who'd like to contribute to that. That would be very welcome. There'll be a summer teaching project in the summer for people who want to teach English out there as well. So if you could come tomorrow, that'd be great, at 6 p.m. in the basement of St. Clement's building. Otherwise, if you can't come tomorrow, could you come and see me now if you're interested in helping?